tonight on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis to discuss the breaking story of Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Troy LaRavier, and hosting the official public premiere of the Golden Rule Films' groundbreaking new documentary, Breaking the Silence, Dara Sananda G and Freddie Bell. But now, live from the Allstate Skyline Studio here in Chicago, we are broadcasting live.
In 2015, 40% of registered voters showed up to cast their ballot in the runoff election, the very first mayoral runoff election in Chicago's history. 40%, that's less than half of all registered voters in the city of Chicago, to cast a ballot, to exercise their right that men and women have fought and died for throughout our country's history. And why? Why do less than half of us even show up to bother voting? Many of us have given up. We cite the city's corruption. Almost since the very first days of Fort Dearborn, we feel like, well, what difference does it make? And with Mayor Emanuel, people felt like, well, he's going to win anyway. So they didn't bother to show up. Today, everything changed. And here's the thing. Your local politicians are the ones that fundamentally, day to day, have a greater impact than national politicians do. And that's why we want to have a conversation with as many of the candidates, because there's a pretty big field. And right now on the line with us, Andrea, of course, is joining us. Finally back from vacation.
I know.
I apologize that we have to jump right in this, because this is the biggest.
No.
This is nationally, internationally, crazy town.
Trust me. I've been texting with Troy and his spokesman for the past half hour. I'm like, five more minutes. Just hang on. So
yes.
We have to thank Troy for hanging on for five more minutes. About, what, 10 times did I tell you guys?
Yes. I'm guessing.
Only six.
Oh, thanks, Troy.
You've been counting.
Thank you.
We are on the line with Troy LaRavier, who is, of course, running for mayor of the city of Chicago.
LaRavier.
He said he would be generous with me if I got it wrong or right. Either way, it works.
Yeah, I am very generous. LaRavier is the name.
Let me do it phonetically. LaRavier. Is that right?
That's right. That is perfect.
I got it.
Troy LaRavier. Yeah.
Here's the great part. Andrea's got it.
Yes.
So if I don't, she's got it. It all works out very well. And tell us a little bit about your story, because we know you were the principal of a school and you butted heads with the mayor of Chicago when it came to the issues that were important to your students, to the individuals in your community. And you decided, you know what, if you're going to remove me from my job just because I was vocal, guess what? I'm going to take you on one-on-one.
Well, I've been taking them on one-on-one long before I was removed from my job. I think that's kind of a misnomer. I became an educator so that I can ensure that young people realize their God-given potential. That was why I became an educator. And when I was working as a principal, we took Blaine Elementary and made it the number one neighborhood school in Chicago. We improved its performance every year. Before I was at Blaine, we tripled the number of kids meeting math standards at Johnson School on the west side. And so I've been able to raise the performance of educational institutions everywhere I've gone. And while I was principal at Blaine, I began to see how corruption in City Hall, where they're spending more and more money on Rahm Emanuel's campaign contributors and taking that money, literally taking that money, you can see the money being taken away from your school. And principals didn't like it. They talked about it behind the scenes, but many people were afraid of losing their jobs. And I remember when I first talked about speaking out, they asked me, aren't you scared of losing your job? And I said, I didn't get into this for a job. I got it just to ensure young people realize their God-given potential, and they cannot do that in a system as corrupt as this, with the resources that we need to ensure they get what they need to realize the potential are continuously being taken away. So we all know the story of Barbara Bird Bennett,
the CEO
of Chicago Public Schools, who is in jail right now for her role in a bribery scheme. What many people do not know is that there was one principal out of more than 600 who spoke against that contract when she was at the height of her power before it was ever investigated, and risked his job to do so because he saw that $20 million was being taken from schools across the city. And that principal was the man you're talking to. Many of us know about the filthy schools debacle in CPS, where the Aramark and Sodexo companies which contributed over $250,000 to Emanuel's campaign fund, got hundreds of millions of odd tax dollars to supposedly keep schools clean, but left them filthy. But what many people do not know is that you can go back to 2015, 3 years ago, and you'll see one principal repeatedly in the papers, in the Sun-Times, in the Tribune, even in the Washington Post, trying to out that scandal and risking his job to do so. And so Emanuel hadn't done anything to me. I was the principal. Matter of fact, he had given me three straight merit awards for the growth that my schools achieved under my leadership. So he hadn't done anything to me. I came out against him and his policies, not because of anything he did to me, but because of the impact, the harmful impact that his policies were having on my students and students across this city. And so it's never been about him for me. It's always been about what's best for the young people I was supposed to be serving and the families and communities they come from.
Well, Troy, what were the justifications for taking money from those schools? Because I grew up in a neighborhood, I grew up in Norwood Park, where kids in the 70s and 80s from communities on the south and west sides were bussed. They were taken out of their neighborhoods. And basically, the way I always saw it, they were told, your community isn't worth investing in. We're going to take you an hour to an hour and a half away to a neighborhood where the streets are clean and it's really safe. You can't live there, but we're going to show you how life is for the people who can't afford it and then send you back home at the end of the day. What justification do we have for basically continuing that and not investing in the communities that you serve and that so many of our students are in a disadvantage?
So the logic behind busing, as I understand it, was a little bit different. It's that we understand that we are in a system where that if it is segregated, then if it's segregated, it's when you segregate people, then you can target them for disinvestment.
Right.
But if you put white kids and black kids in the same schools, then you're not going to disinvest in that school because it has students in it who are not part of that vulnerable population that often gets targeted for disinvestment. You mix them together, and it's very difficult to then target these students because they're in the same environment.
Right.
That was my understanding of how busing was supposed to work and inter-school integration is supposed to work. But even in environments like that, they would then put the African-American students in the so-called regular or remedial classes and large class sizes, and then take white students and put them in, give them a gifted, they created gifted programs, began to expand based on the fact that, based on school busing and immigration as a way to continue the disinvestment in African-American and Latino students, even in an integrated classroom. And so we find that systems that want to target populations for disinvestment find ways to do it, whether they're integrated or not.
And that's the reason.
And this system has certainly been one of them.
But the reason I ask that is because I think that it has a ripple effect to this point where we say, okay, fine, we're going to have your schools and your communities, but now we're going to close down a bunch of them, and we're also not going to invest in them, and we're going to redirect the money to other schools. So I think it has an effect because, as you mentioned, it's disinvestment not just in the schools, but then in the communities as a part of that.
Right. So the disinvestment isn't even to redirect the money towards other schools, because all schools, you know, I was principal of Blaine Elementary. This was a predominantly white school. And during Emanuel's budget cuts of 2013, we lost $750,000, and schools across the city lost money. And that was as a result of a disinvestment in the entire public education system. Now, black and brown schools certainly took the brunt of that, but schools across the district were disinvested in. And they were disinvested in because we have a political system, and particularly in City Hall and the mayor's office, their campaigns are funded by people who profit from school privatization, who profit from the charterization of the district. And you can't charterize a district or privatize a district unless you paint a picture of failure. And so this investment creates the failure, the very failure that they then use as a justification for shutting down schools and then privatizing them. And then these private options then create millions of dollars of profit for the school privatizers who, guess what, just happen to be contributors to Rahm Emanuel's campaign fund. And so corruption is at the corruption is at the root of it. Greed is at the root of it. And racism has always been one of the greatest and most effective tools of corruption and greed.
So now with Mayor Emanuel being out of the picture, there was a recent survey that showed, number one, safety, public safety, is what residents are most concerned about in the city of Chicago. Number two is education. So with Mayor Emanuel out of the picture now, how about public safety? Let's talk about that.
And so when Mayor Emanuel was in the picture, was still in this race, the people of Chicago had a choice between, when he and I were both in the campaign, the people of Chicago had a choice between someone who would invest in communities across the city or someone who would concentrate investments downtown. Now, the people of Chicago still have the first choice. That when we talk about public safety, the first thing people mention is often the police. You know, if you go out to Winnetka, you know, they're safe, and they're not safe because of their police department. If you go to certain communities within Chicago that we would consider safe, they're not safe because they have a different police department. We have the same police department. Right? The same police department governs the entire city. They're safe because they have economic opportunity. They're safe because the people in those communities do not have to resort to a black market economy or an underground economy just to make a living for themselves. They're safe because there's opportunity and also because they have a strong educational systems. That if you look at the last school where Ron sends his kids, my son goes to public school. And my wife enrolled him in the lab school where Ron sent his kids just for a summer program. And I remember picking my son up from the Gordon Parks Media Laboratory at the University of Chicago Lab School, where in fifth grade he was taking a class in documentary film production. So I go in, I look at their syllabus, and they have courses in world language from third through eighth grade. They not only have art, but they have theater, they have sculpture, they have painting. They even have a course in world cuisines. Now, can you imagine the young people on the South and West sides having access to that kind of curriculum throughout their school days and then going up and then leaving that kind of and then having that kind of education and going out and picking up a gun, having the economic opportunity and going out and committing and getting themselves involved in an alternative economy that is more likely to produce a culture of violence. And so education, because you mentioned, so education right. and economic opportunity are the keys to creating a culture where that violence is not as prevalent as the one that we have right now. And it's so prevalent because the education and the economic opportunity are not there.
What would you say, Troy, to the listeners right now who are concerned, listening to us, the stress that you have, the emphasis you have on education, when they're worried about their property taxes, when they're worried, as Andrea mentioned,
right.
safety, public safety, they're worried about the pension obligations of the city, which obviously has a tremendous effect on our budget and our ability to pay bills. What do you have to say to those listeners, those voters?
I'll say two things. Number one, whenever you're looking for a responsible elected official who can do an effective job, you want them to be able, you want them to have a record of being able to do at least three things. One, a record of responsibly managing public money.
Okay.
We know that City Hall right now does not have that. We get billions and billions of dollars more in debt. They indebt us, the taxpayers, to the banks that fund their campaigns more and more every single year. I have managed tens of millions of dollars responsibly in my role as both a principal and president of the Principals Association. Not a dime lost to corruption, not a dime lost to pay to play, not a dime in debt or a dime in deficit. So that's number one, responsible management of public money. Number two, we want elected officials who have a record of improving public institutions, improving their performance. And again, everywhere I've gone, I've improved the performance of the public institutions that I've been in charge of. And that is a transferable skill because the main thing you do is you build the capacity of the people who work in that institution, the public servants, and you bring in, you base your policy on best practice because no official knows everything, but you can bring in good people. And I have that record of bringing in competent, ethical, and skilled people to to improve the performance of the institutions that I've been in charge of. That's the same thing we're going to do in the city. And the last thing that every public official needs to be able to do and every resident should be looking for in their public officials, and the reason this is so important is because of corruption. Right? Corruption, at its essence, is that we have public officials who will sacrifice the public good for private gain. And so what we want in a public official is someone who has a record of sacrificing private gain for the public good. There is no one in this race that has that record the way I do and has all three of those things, the ability or the track record of improving public institutions, a track record of responsibly managing public money and public funds, and the ability to sacrifice, and a track record of sacrificing personal gain for the public good. And so that's number one. Number two, I would go back to my original statement.
I thought that was three.
I didn't start this off with education. Say that again.
Okay. I thought you already gave us three. Okay, okay, go ahead. You didn't start this off with education.
There were two parts. So part one had three subparts, and then part two is going back to my original statement that I started with. I didn't start this off with education.
Gotcha.
I said Chicago had a choice. I said Chicago had a choice to see someone who has shown that he will only invest or do most of his major investments downtown. I have something that I call the Ferris wheel test. It's the $55 million of public money in Navy Pier, and most of that went to a Ferris wheel. But then if you go and look at the mayor's so-called Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, you know how much money that fund spent on the entire South and West Sides?
How much?
$11 million. $11 million for the entire South and West Sides versus $55 million for one downtown project on a Ferris wheel. And so that gives you a sense of the gross inequity. We're not even talking about the hundreds of millions that have been spent downtown. We're talking about one project that got five times more public funds than the entire South and West Sides of this city. So under my administration, we're going to flip that. We're going to invest the billions in the neighborhoods on the Southwest and North areas of parts of the North Side that need development. And then we're going to allow downtown to fund itself with the massive amount of private wealth that it already has. They don't need our public welfare dollars.
That's a lot to ingest.
That's a lot. I've got parts one and two, subset one, two, and three. I want to give our listeners a chance to chime in. Would you mind taking calls and texts from listeners by any chance?
Oh, I would love to. Those are the folks that I want to reach. Those are the people I have to serve. Or whether they're either questions, their ideas, definitely.
The ball game has changed, as they say. Rahm Emanuel, in a jaw-dropping press conference today, announced that he will not be seeking re-election.
Were you surprised, Troy, when you heard that?
No.
You were not?
No,
Patty and I were discussing this in the hallway today, and it's I don't know if this would be, I guess it would be ironic because it comes full circle. A friend of mine, also on radio, last week said, what are the chances do you think Rahm won't run? Will not run. And I said, oh, zero. I said, there's 100%. She said, I think there's about a 3% chance he won't run.
Guess what the chances were?
Yeah, 100%. Boy, that's interesting, though, that you weren't surprised.
Let's take a break here, and Troy will chime in about that. And our listeners are welcome to call at 312-981-7200. Again, the number is 312-981-7200. We're on the line with mayoral candidate Troy LaRivière.
LaRivière.
No, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to get it. Nope. I'll get it before we're done. I promise, Troy. I'll get there. Troy is on the line. More after this on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. We have on the line with us one of the candidates for the mayor of the city of Chicago, Troy. Go ahead and say it. Go ahead and say it.
LaRivière
is on the line with us. I'm going to just have Andrea say it.
But you know what? Okay.
LaRivière.
Troy, remember the first time I interviewed you, you were at Blaine. It was 2015. It was before the kangaroo court comments. So that was 2016, I know. And I remember you coming out and you were talking to all the media and myself. I think Mike Lowe was there and you gave us the tutorial. So I think it's been ingrained in me. So that's why I just have since I've interviewed you before, I just have a couple of years on, Patty, so... But she's doing well.
I appreciate that.
Important. Yeah. Hey, my name's been pronounced Vasquez most of my life.
Oh, I get like so Andrea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah.
Well, as Andrea was asking, you know, how surprised you were. Why were you not surprised that Mayor Emanuel dropped out of the race for re-election?
When someone asked me maybe a week ago what I thought the chances were, and I said 50-50. Huh. And I said 50-50 because I understand that Rahm Emanuel does not run this city for himself. He runs it for a set of very wealthy interests. He runs it for the real estate developers. I mean, he's not our, he's, I mean, in a sense, we don't have a mayor. The real estate developers have a mayor. The bankers have a mayor. The toxic venture and vulture capitalists who want to squeeze us of every tax dollar we possibly they possibly can, they have a mayor who does their bidding. And having control of the mayor's office is extremely important for them because they get to keep the gravy train running to indebt us continually to them by using their connections with the mayor's office, their control of the mayor's office and the city council. And so because controlling the city is so important for them, they don't want to put all of their eggs in one basket, in the Emanuel basket, particularly when he is so vulnerable. And so I thought that it was quite likely that those interests would make the decision that Emanuel was no longer a viable candidate or a likely successful option for them if they wanted to maintain control of the mayor's office and the city council through the mayor's office. And that, you know, they would have their come-to-Jesus moment with Emanuel, let him know that, you know, he was damaged goods and they could no longer work their agenda through him and that they needed to find someone else, which brings me to the most important point is we have to realize that even though Emanuel is going away, those interests that have been behind all of the toxic policies that City Hall has put forth, those interests aren't going anywhere. We would be naive to believe that they haven't already planned which candidate or candidates they are going to back. And so when the financial reporting happens, we need to be taking a look at where the real estate developers are putting their money, who they're putting their money, the luxury real estate developers, where the banks who have been indebting us to them through Emanuel are putting their money. And when we see the candidates who are getting that money, we know those are the candidates who are not going to serve our interests, but are going to serve the interests of the real estate developers, the bankers, the downtown, the high-end law firms. And the like, the 1%, basically. And so those interests are never going away. And we have to think more about or less about Emanuel and more about who those interests are backing, because if they're backing them, then those candidates certainly won't be representing us.
Well, we'll definitely be thinking less about Rahm Emanuel in the coming election because he has withdrawn his name. And we've been on the line with mayoral candidate Troy Larivière, who has been gracious enough to join us this late. We hope to continue this conversation with you at another time. I want to, again, it's going to be a long race. We're just at the beginning of it now because all bets are off. Sir, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll have you on again soon at your convenience. Or ours.
Thank you so much. If your audience wants to learn a little bit more about me, they can go to troyforchicago.com. That's troyforchicago.com. Thank you so much.
Troyforchicago.com.
Thank you, sir. It is time now for our news. And let me make sure that I've got everything in front of me that I need here with your news. Thank you so much for joining us. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. By the way, Andrea Darlis is back.
Hey.
There were so many people who were like, she's not on vacation. I see her on TV every day.
I know.
Were you doing TV?
No, I did. What I did was I do the weekend break features on Saturday and Sunday for the TV station. So I took, because our shift, you know, we had, which I guess worked out well, because I think there was a very, very short show one of the nights.
17 minutes. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Right. So I was. I didn't anticipate it would only be 17 minutes, but I thought, all right, since I have to be at the TV station the next morning at 5 o'clock, you know, I'd take that day off and start my vacation that day, then did the TV, and then I went on vacation.
All right.
Well, so I didn't go away. I had a staycation.
So 630 asked and answered.
Aw, there you are.
Just saying.
I was around.
She was around.
It was
and
a
around
staycation.
Town.
It was,
exactly. Yeah. Watching The Handmaid's Tale. We'll talk about it later.
Oh, God. I'm so hooked. I texted you. I'm like, Patty, I'm so mad at you.
I know.
And I let it stew for a few minutes. And did you know that's why?
I didn't know you were mad that was because of the. Well, no.
No, just because I'm hooked now and I can't.
I
agree. Stop watching it.
Well, there's something to be said when you watch something that it conjures up the kind of emotion, right?
Oh,
whether
my
it's
God.
Anger or frustration. And that's
and
why
it's all of those.
Well, you're drawn into, you know, there's a reason why motion pictures are still something that grabs our attention, our
yes.
emotions, our imaginations. And we're thrilled to have in studio with us the documentary filmmakers Freddie Bell and Dara Senandaji. I had it right off the air. Tell them I had it right off the air. Senandaji.
You did have it right off the air.
Senandaji.
It was perfect. Yeah, Senandaji. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say it really fast, very quickly. But you have a documentary that you want people to know about called Breaking the Silence, which is going to be at the Davis Theater, of course, right in Lincoln Square.
Yes, that's correct.
That's coming up just on tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
Used
7.
To be my
7
p.m. favorite place to see a movie.
Oh, yeah.
When
used
I lived
be?
In Wrigleyville.
Well, used to be. You should, have you...
Because I haven't been in a while. Because
it's
now I'm binging
now.
Netflix and Hulu. But it used to be $5 movies.
But it's all remodeled now.
I've
been there.
No, I need to go. I haven't been there since it's remodeled.
It's
awesome.
Gorgeous.
It's a beautiful
and
theater.
A great place to launch here. Is this where you're launching your documentary?
Yes, exactly.
Awesome.
Congratulations
Thank
on this.
You.
Tell us about Breaking the Silence.
So, where do I start?
I'm more than happy to help you out.
No, it's
well, this is a little bit about mental illness.
Yes.
And,
okay,
and about people who deal with bipolar diagnosis.
So there's a whole backstory to it, too. And so, like, effectively, you know, the film is a journey film, right?
Okay.
So it's a personal story, but there's also an information aspect to it, and it's woven together mm-hmm. throughout the film. But yes, in essence, it is about mental health, but it's also about perseverance and determination and stamina and willpower and that kind of stuff as well.
Well, and that's the thing, is that when we talk about mental illness, we sort of have this general term for when we, you know, we hear a news story
right.
or, you know, or we need to provide services. So we don't have that, you know, and the same thing is true for any diagnosis. Okay, we know we need to battle this or someone's dealing with this issue. But when you know someone's personal story and the day-to-day situations, it makes a difference. It's impactful, isn't it?
That's 100% correct.
True.
And it gives a human element to the story too, right? And because a lot of times we see statistics and we see numbers and we see, you know, folks talking about diagnoses or treatments and I think a lot of what we're trying to do with this film is to show that human element of what folks are going through and how folks can really be suffering, and then how we can help folks in an empathetic and compassionate way rather than in a maybe condescending or stigmatization kind of a way.
Remember when Catherine Zeta-Jones came out as bipolar? And I think that really put a whole new face to, you know, you have this beautiful, wonderful, talented movie star living what everybody from what we all see as, oh, this wonderful life and whatnot, but dealing with bipolar, you know, and an illness of that sort, her interior struggle. So, you know, I think they'd kind of put a face with the issue.
Because no one wanted to admit to it.
Exactly,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's part of Breaking the Silence too, is we're trying to encourage folks and empower folks to be able to talk about this in an intelligent and an honest and open way, really. You know, I mean, we're trying to create a discourse here, or at least help catalyze a discourse that we think is very important, you know, we mm-hmm. think is something that can do something really good for society. And that's really why we're doing this in the first place, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're out to really see if we can make a positive impact on society in some way or another. You know, that's what it's about, you know.
Freddie, where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Ohio.
You grew up in Ohio. It's a very big state.
Toledo.
So many cities. I always feel badly when someone doesn't want to.
No,
give
I
us...
want to. I'm
okay.
proud of it.
Yeah,
Toledo. Toledo,
yeah, Toledo Ohio.
Ohio.
It's a great yes. town. And as a filmmaker, is this part? What drew you to this story? Is this something that's personal to you? Is this part of your life? You know. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's personal.
Okay.
Really good friend of mine.
Okay.
He pretty much told me he was dealing with this
okay.
situation, and I didn't, you know, I hadn't dealt with anything like this before, and I was at a crossroads, I had a decision to make, and I said, you know what, this is my friend, I'm going to stick in with him and stick in it and work with him and help him out.
How did he tell you that he was dealing with bipolar diagnosis?
He he has a manuscript, and he handed me this manuscript.
Wow.
And I was blown away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you
and
know,
that's how he revealed it to you.
Yeah, that's how he revealed it to me, and it just really hit me. You know, it was really hard. You know, so
I'm on your website and I'm looking at all of the different, you know, which is wonderful. You give credit to so many people, but the interview subjects are There's so many. I would think maybe one or two or three. So my question was going to be, did you guys have a hard time finding people to talk, or people who didn't want to talk, or once you started interviewing, it was like, oh my gosh, the floodgates open. We need to get this out and talk about this.
As far as the interview subjects?
Yeah, the interview subjects.
We didn't have too many problems with the interview subjects. When they found out what the topic was, they were on board.
Yeah.
It was really, really easy, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it was a wonderful stretch as far as, but it's a winding road, you know, like with documentary filmmaking, you know, you find one door and it leads to another door, it leads to another crevice, and then you overturn that rock, and then there's so much more behind that, you know. So
of
like,
course.
So we found some interviews that led to more and more and more, and then we had to figure out a way to craft a storyline around all of that. So,
there's four Senandajis.
I know, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm proud of them.
That's
I'm proud
right.
of all of those Senandajis.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, in the film, you'll see why, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because that's really a lot of what this is about, too, is the support structure, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of folks out
right.
there who are suffering really intensely don't have a support structure like I have and had. Mm-hmm. So it's not easy, and we recognize that. And so I feel incredibly fortunate and grateful to be able to be in a situation where I do have a support network I can rely on, that we can discuss things and things like that.
And do you, I mean, when you think about the folks that don't have the support network, I mean, it does make you take a step back and give you that perspective and go, what would I even do? And how do I, and I think telling your story then helps those who don't necessarily have people in their lives, maybe, you know, have the opportunity to bring others in.
Go ahead, Ray.
Right.
Well, prior to, I guess, like in pre-production, I did a little research and went to a couple of support groups, and it's nothing like what we're talking about. It was real depressing, you know, lack of a better word. And I just wanted to get a feel of what they were really going through. And I talked to Dara about it, and we made up our minds. We were like, we're really going to do something to really help people. And, you know, like you said, you know, give them the opportunity to stand up and say something, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because so many don't have that opportunity.
They don't.
That's right. And it's a good point that you brought up, too, because I think that with folks that are really struggling, it's really important to realize that you're not alone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having folks around you that are like Freddie or family or friends, and I have a lot of good friends in Chicago that I have a lot of good times with, and that helps to be able to open up and have release and catharsis and creativity. And so I think when we're looking at this in a way where families and friends and partners and wives and husbands and brothers and sisters can look at this in a different way and say, wait a minute, why is someone acting the way they are? Why are they feeling the way they are? What's behind this? And we're trying to get to the root of the cause of some of this stuff. And then maybe we'll have a little more empathy for each other and be able to walk in each other's shoes a little bit better, and then be able to really craft a support network based on a sense of compassion rather than potentially condescension or stigma, right?
And removing the stigma is a part of the goal here. And so we encourage folks who have the opportunity to go see this new documentary film, Breaking the Silence. It's at the Davis Theater in Chicago. That's tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Again, the Davis Theater is in Lincoln Square, right there on Lincoln Avenue in between Wilson and almost, I think it's Lawrence, I guess, is the next big street, right before you get to that, you know, sort of shopping area. You can go, you have something to eat, one of the great restaurants, go see this wonderful film and be a part of it. There's a Q&A as well involved.
There is going to be a Q&A afterwards. We're going to have a couple of special guests with us, actually from the film itself, and so hopefully
you'll be at the Carbon Arc, which is wonderful.
Oh, yes, the Carbon Arc is a nice little spot too, and so we're really excited for it. So
more with our guests. We're gonna take a quick break here. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We have Dara Senandaji in studio and Freddie Bell, who are the documentary filmmakers of Breaking the Silence. 312-981-7200. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to text us or call us to that number. More in a moment. Breaking the Silence is premiering at the Davis Theater in Chicago tomorrow night. That's September 5th at 7 p.m. The Davis Theater is located in Lincoln Square, right there on Lincoln Avenue. And you can go to BTS, the movie, Breaking the Silence, themovie.com. Not the whole word, but BTS, themovie.com. Joining us in studio are the filmmakers Dara Senandaji and Freddie Bell. And I was asking Freddie where he was from, which is Toledo, Ohio. Dara, where are you from originally?
Wow. Well, actually, I was born in Tehran, Iran.
Okay.
And we came over when I was a baby, and mm-hmm. I've been in the Chicago area, western suburbs, and then in and out of the city for pretty much my whole life. I went out east to school, but I've been in Chicago pretty much my whole life.
Yeah. And when you... Awesome. Are there other projects that you've worked on? Is this the kind of... Why are you both flinching? You both look at each other like, how do we answer this?
Yeah. Well, so we've been working on projects for almost five years.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And this one took 3.5.
Yeah.
So. It's a lot of time spent together. Yeah.
Does it make a difference when it's something so personal?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
right. Yes.
This is the work, I think, that we... are the most proud of right now.
Pretty much.
You know, because I think we put a lot of heart and soul into it. I mean, it's not just time and effort, but a lot of emotion.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you're both co-producers, writers, directors. How is it, what is it like directing, especially with you, you're directing your family? I mean, is that kind of difficult?
Yeah.
Is it like a cut? No,
oh,
throw
boy.
It away?
Not at all. In fact, the way that we approach, and I'll let Freddie talk about it too, but it organic, right? I mean, that was our approach to a lot of it. It's just, I mean, because a lot of it was we were green too. We're kind of learning on the fly, you know? And so like, we like to let people talk, you know, let people kind of, and we want to warm people up, but then after a while they get going and then you just let it happen.
Right.
You know?
So, start with, what's your favorite color?
Exactly.
Which one of your kids you like the most? You know,
yeah. Both equally.
And I think that something, when you make it so personal and you're sharing this story, one of the things people don't really understand is what is bipolar. It becomes a punchline for people. How do you approach that as defining, not just through your family, but for an audience to enable them to understand it more fully?
Great question. So, you know, this is a lot of what we look at in the film,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to go too deep into it, but we go through, you know, the symptomology and diagnosis and origins and causes of these kinds of things, and there's a lot of gray area, honestly.
So when we
talk about things and we label them and we bring out, you know, terms and, you know, lexicon, you know, it's very it's hard because, you know, because right now we don't have genetic tests. We don't have brain scan. Brain imaging can't do it. Blood tests can't do it. You know, so people go on symptoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just behavioral symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at it and they say, okay, how do we craft these symptoms into a whole so we can create a diagnosis out of it? And they have a manual and psychiatric professionals have found, you know, symptomology across populations, you know, and cross sections of society. So they put these together and they find a way to treat based on symptomology. And so there's a lot of gray area in those symptoms. And so what is bipolar disorder? What is schizophrenia? What is schizoaffective disorder? What is psychosis? You know, all of these terms are definable, but how concrete are the definitions, and then how do we use that to help treat people and help heal people?
And how much does culture have an impact on how we handle these diagnoses?
In fact, there's a professor from Stanford in the film who is an anthropologist who talks about who we talk to about a lot of that kind of stuff. And there is a sociocultural aspect to this too, because she has done research on psychosis overseas, sub-Saharan Africa and Chennai, India, and this and that. And she does find that, like, there are differences in symptomology based on geographic region.
And different symptoms in general too. So a symptom for one, for psychosis, might be a different symptom or at a different level than, say, bipolar disorder.
Right.
Is that
then
correct?
That's another thing. Is like, so really a lot of what the film we talk about is psychosis, right? Which is, and without going too deep into it, it's mostly about hallucinations and delusions, right?
Oh,
and you can have that in bipolar disorder. You can also have that in schizophrenia and several other different conditions or diagnoses. So there's crossover in all of this, and a lot of some of the doctors in the film talk about what this crossover actually is and how we can conceptualize it. But again, one of the main points I want to bring across here is there's a lot of gray area in this.
Yeah.
Break the Silence, the documentary. Breaking the Silence is the documentary premiering at the Davis Theater right here in Chicago tomorrow night, September 5th at 7 p.m. Let's make sure you know more about this when we come back in just a moment with our guests, Dara Sanandaji and Freddie Bell, the filmmakers of Breaking the Silence. More on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis when we come back. Oh, it's going right to the news? You said to take it. Mayor Emanuel. Announced at a press conference today, and I think a lot of people thought it was going to be a conversation about the violence over the Labor Day weekend.
Right.
Obviously, another weekend where there were many shootings, including the shooting of a Northwestern grad student at the border between Evanston and Chicago.
Right, right. And the guy they interviewed, did you see the guy on Channel 9 who was, he had crossed the street. You know, this was either mistaken identity or something. Obviously, this person was not the intended target. They were caught in this crossfire.
Right.
And Channel 9 interviewed this man who had literally crossed the street, Patty, and was walking. Then the shots came out, and he turned and looked, and it was where he was just standing in front of the gate there.
Oh, man.
So I just, God, life is so precious.
So when he made the announcement, Mayor Emanuel made the announcement that he would not be seeking re-election as we sort of gear up for this mayoral race. Declan was actually in physical therapy. My phone buzzed because I get these alerts from the Chicago Tribune, and I screamed in the middle of the therapy lab. I was like, what?
I was just stunned. I couldn't believe it. I got a text from a friend who used to work at a different radio station and said, Rahm's not running.
Right.
That's... And I wrote back, I went, what?
Right.
But this was earlier this morning, so she had obviously gotten a heads up that this is what the presser was going to be about. And then by that time, everyone's boom, 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 boom. It's going crazy.
Oh,
it's going to happen.
Immediately, of course.
And then, of course, you know, he makes the announcement. So I thought it was a bombshell.
Oh, I agree. Did you have a reaction to this? Because, did it surprise you?
It surprised me a lot. I didn't think I was actually people who had posted about it. A lot of people had actually said that they were downtown and that people were gathering signatures for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Even today, still this morning. So
they didn't
even
know.
Yeah, no one knew apparently.
Oh, man. Boy. He didn't even bother to tell the people that were out there hitting the pavement for him with clipboards and pens.
Now the rumor mill and everything is just kind of spinning out of control as far as he's going to go work for Obama. He's going to run for Senate. You know, he's got things up his sleeve.
Well,
I guarantee he does have something planned.
Right.
I don't think Mayor Emanuel is the type of person to just say, I'm done. I'm going to go retire. I'm going to sit on a beach.
I'm amazed by how many people say they knew or had suspicions. Like Troy LaRivière.
He said it was 50.
LaRivière.
He 50-50. 50-50.
Yeah.
Wow.
I talked to a legislator today who said she saw it coming. I saw in Chicago Tonight that one of the panelists said that they talked to somebody who heard that Rahm's team was trying to come up with a story with an exit strategy.
Okay.
And then you get people who are like, maybe it was something personal. Maybe it's a health concern. Maybe it's a relationship issue, right? We hardly ever see Amy Ruhl. I mean, and this is one of those things where how do you not speculate is the question. Right.
Everybody speculated about Lisa Madigan when she said, I'm done.
Right.
She's at the height, you know, the pinnacle of her legislative career at this point.
Right.
She could have run for mayor. Still could.
And will she?
Right. Mm-hmm. She absolutely could have run for governor and feasibly could have won. You know, a lot of people like Lisa Madigan. You know,
I think she's
been, no matter what her last name is, she's been a great attorney general for this state, you know, and a champion for women's causes.
And people are wondering, too, then, and you were telling me off the air that you have an answer for people who are wondering what happens to the $10 million in campaign funds that he has raised. Is it $10
million? Yeah, it is. It's in excess of $10 million. He clearly had the most. I think Gary McCarthy was second with three, and I'll get the numbers.
Okay.
But texters were wondering, now that Rahm is not running for re-election, what happens to the money in his war chest? I used to think that they get to keep it and do whatever they want with it.
Which would be sneaky.
Right.
And wrong.
This came up.
And not surprising.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. This came up when Governor Ryan went to jail and Governor Blagojevich went to jail. They said, what about all the money in the war chest? More specifically, Governor Blagojevich, because he had a lot. So what a campaign committee is allowed to do with any lingering cash, they can donate the funds to charities or other political parties. They can only contribute $2,000, though, per election to other candidates, or they can save the money in case he chooses to run again.
Okay. Interesting.
So,
well, not run again, but that means for any office.
Yes.
He can use those funds
to run for...
Should he decide to run for what? I speculate.
You might not be far off.
For Durbin's seat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, Dick Durbin has in the past hinted that he might be interested in retiring at some point in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised by that. Other people are speculating that maybe Rahm has created some sort of alliance with a company in a similar way that Mayor Daley had done before he left with the meter companies. Yes. Somehow he was involved in that financial boon. So is it real estate? Is it, I mean, there's so much development going in the city, as many people said. You know, he got skyscrapers back into downtown Chicago.
Right, right. And he did, and I mean, development, and I know, and Mayor Daley, and we were talking about this too, Patty, Mayor Daley and Maggie Daley were really champions as far as beautifying many of the neighborhoods, bringing back, you know, Little Village and, you know, different areas of the city. Pilsen. Rahm Emanuel, I think, has kind of held to that tradition, too. He's really focusing on the neighborhoods, revitalizing, restoring, and beautifying to an extent, too.
And in my neighborhood, it seems as though a lot of that comes from the alderman. So I don't know how much he has, I'm not discarding anything as far as what his accomplishments might have been in that regard, because I think the bigger picture is, as a leader, he has not connected with the neighborhoods that have needed it the most, that have felt the most left out and most disadvantage when it comes, and when we talk about violence, you know what's fascinating to me is it seems as though there's a contentious relationship with the Chicago Police Department and the mayor.
That's a very valid point.
And the communities that feel really the strain with, you know, with the police department too. So they have a strain with the mayor. There's all these aspects of our city, and then of course you have people who are fed up with their property taxes, fed up with the way we pay our bills.
Right.
Really think that there's corruption, and somehow we've never, with you know, all the rumors about Mayor Daley, you know, people alluding to, as I believe Troy LaRavier said, that the, you know, City Hall is corrupt. He didn't. He seemed to say that Rahm Emanuel was in the pocket of real estate developers as well.
Right.
There have been all kinds of rumors, and yet nothing has ever come to fruition. None of these rumors have really borne any fruit.
I was completely surprised when Rahm Emanuel forced the runoff with Chuy Garcia last time. I was very surprised. He won. It was the first time, as you had alluded to earlier, that there was a runoff
ever
in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And again, this is just my opinion. I'm not for any particular candidate. I didn't foresee Rahm being forced into a runoff with the 11 candidates that are out there right now. I thought he could have won this election.
Well, outright. And I think a lot of people would have thought that they would have kind of canceled each other out.
Right. And that's what I was doing. I was kind of like not playing tic-tac-toe, but, you know, we have all the pictures of all the candidates in front of us. And I'm thinking, okay, Lightfoot and McCarthy, you know, they both have police ties.
Right.
But then again, Paul Vallis does too, having two sons who were police officers. So, you know, and then the black vote is going to be huge too. Who's the black community going to throw their support behind?
I cannot believe that Dorothy Brown is on this list.
I can't believe
Brown is still in office.
I was so surprised
she won again.
I agree with you on that.
But then again, in the state of Illinois, the FBI was investigating Governor Blagojevich. We all knew about it.
It was
in the paper all the time. We're like, yeah, we'll go with that guy. Because the other lady's playing the accordion. We can't have Judy Bartopinka.
Right.
That's who was running against him.
Remember that. Yes.
You know, we just kind of go, yeah. We just throw up our hands. And in most of those elections, when it comes to the governor's race, it has been less than 30% show up for voting.
Oh, my God. And that's awful. I mean, I think last election, it was, for the primary anyway, we were in double digits. But I remember reporting on so many of these primaries. And
for the governor's race?
No, I'm sorry, for the mayoral.
The primary. You know, I agree. It was, I think, total, it might have turned out to be 27, but in a lot of precincts, it was significantly lower.
Yeah.
In the state of Illinois, for the primary in which Governor Rauner won the nomination, it was 16% of registered voters in the state of Illinois. And if you think of how many candidates there were, that means that maybe 2-4% of registered voters in the state of Illinois chose Governor Rauner to be the candidate on the Republican ticket.
See, I don't understand the lack of interest in voting. I couldn't wait. I mean, maybe, and I don't think I was that big of a dork. I couldn't wait to vote.
I couldn't either.
You know, and
I was very excited.
Even to this day, I love to vote. And I always go in person on election day. Only one time when I was in New York for the presidential election, I knew I was going to be out of town, and I early voted.
Yeah, I love
it. Don't you love to go?
I do. I like it so much, I make my husband dress up as a precinct captain. Let's take a quick break. 312-981-7200. What do you think? Mayor Emanuel's out. Do you want to speculate? Do you want to tell us who you like in the field? We can tell you who those folks are, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. 312-981-7200 when we come back on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. That is a great line, by the way. This has been the job of a lifetime, but it is not a job for a lifetime.
It's a great quote, yeah. It is.
And I saw former Governor Quinn kind of taking credit for, hey, see, my term limits.
Right.
Rahm, you know, is taking that to heart.
That's an argument I heard today as well, mm-hmm. that they were going to push through term limits, the council, and then this would have been his last term. And I thought,
I haven't heard any of
even
that.
Even so, it wouldn't go into effect for this mayor. It would go into effect down the road.
How would you get enough aldermen who would worry about falling out of favor with the mayor to get behind that kind of movement?
Right. And this city council has, I don't want to say they've been a rubber stamp, but they have pretty much approved all of his budgets.
Exactly.
Everything that's come through. I don't even, I mean, this isn't even near a council war.
No,
back in the day.
There are a few outspoken individuals in the
sure.
city council, but for the most part, you're right. He gets things pushed through
mm-hmm.
without much resistance. From the 847, I think Rahm may want to get out before the poop, I'm going to edit there,
yes.
Hits the fan. Could there be something in his closet that might make the headlines? Wouldn't surprise me at all. And that's obviously speculation as well. And that's what we're left with. In the absence of a specific reason,
right.
we speculate.
Mm-hmm.
And since I am a commentator and you are the esteemed
yes.
journalist,
yes.
We sort of have that conversation. We go back and forth on
right.
that.
Right, we do.
That people called me. Someone called me today and they go, do you think he's having a Me Too moment? And I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that.
Right.
On the other hand, you never see them out in public. I mean, you talked about Maggie Daly. She
oh,
was
yeah.
very prominent in the
very
city of Chicago.
Right.
Played a very significant role in not just the wonderful things that you talked about, the beautification of our neighborhoods,
right,
the landscaping,
parks.
But after school programs
oh, yes.
in the city of Chicago and our public schools, she was very fundamental in making that happen.
Yes.
I had the distinct pleasure and honor of thanking her myself not long before she passed away. I was heading into, I was hired to do a comedy show for, they told me it was for prominent women in Chicago, like judges and legislators and councilwomen, all these city council women. And I just don't ask questions. Twice, actually, I performed for Maggie Daly. Once for Maggie and Mayor Daly at a judge's retirement party.
Okay.
And my manager didn't tell me they were going to be there. And I walked out and I was like,
did they laugh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
it was
good.
A great show.
That's great.
So then at the Grand Lux, I was there was a revolving door and I saw a woman with a walker. And I was going to go through the revolving door. And I said, oh, let me open that door for you. And it turned out we were going upstairs. And it was Maggie Daly.
Oh, man.
And she was so unassuming. She didn't have like an entourage with her. She didn't, you know, she said, thank you very much. And we went upstairs and I performed. And at the end of my set, I said, I just want to take this moment to thank you. I have two children in CPS and they have benefited immensely from the programs that you have so wholeheartedly been a part of creating.
Yeah.
And that was, and so as for all the negatives that we obviously can talk about Mayor Daly, mm-hmm. I think that there are things that we can also go, here's the legacy. What's going to be the legacy of Mayor Manuel? I think the construction is going to be
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely. Bringing skyscrapers here, beautifying the Riverwalk. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I really think there is, you know, he did have, you're right, there are many neighborhoods that are in need of more beautification or in need of more resources.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Access.
But access, absolutely. I think Mayor Manuel has done a nice job as far as, you know, that the downtown area. I know Mayor Daly kind of started Millennium Park, you know, the whole what it's become. Emmanuel kind of finished that off. He kind of topped off a lot of that. Very big supporter of you know, women's rights and gay rights and marches and all the parades. And I think, you know, boy, that's such a broad question. I think he will be known for beautification. If I have to say one thing, mm-hmm. I'd say for sure the Riverwalk.
And yet, under his watch, we have become an international
yes.
target. When I was in Wales, I was in a cab in Cardiff, Wales, and we told our driver that we were from Chicago, and he said he wouldn't come here because it was so violent.
Oh, how about it? And when I was
thought,
in Greece, same thing. People would say, oh, they still say, did you see some of this too? Oh, all the crime, just like Al Capone. I mean, everything goes back to Al Capone.
They just said the you know, thugs and gangbangers.
Right.
Like that language has pierced the international landscape, and the image of Chicago seems to really just be all they think of is
doesn't violence. That because you and I are both born and raised in Chicago, South Side, North Side. Doesn't that just break your heart? Because
absolutely.
I love this city. You love this city. To hear that from across the pond, literally, it's just it's gut-wrenching to hear, because our city is known for so much more than that. And truly, they just did the August crime numbers. We're down 20% from this same period last year. Even one murder is too many. I completely agree with that.
But that's not going to carry the news.
No.
People aren't going to talk about that, because they still talk about the tallies at the end of a Labor Day weekend.
Absolutely. Right. So, and when I see that, I think, oh, good, there is some hope. There is a glimmer. We're down 20%. That's really good. Should it be down 50%? Absolutely.
Right.
Should there be none? Yeah. And that'd be ideal.
And with that trend, though, I wonder why the mayor, again, we have to keep wondering why he's decided, and the idea that he might have lost in this field. Maybe I'm just cynical. I honestly thought that he was going to take it away again.
Yeah.
Oh.
I did, too. I completely thought he was. I think, boy, and now... now it's almost anybody's race. I mean, you're going to have your
really is
four. You're going to have your front runners. I mean, Vallis, McCarthy, Lightfoot, Troy LaRavier. Absolutely. I think those are maybe your top four as far as. But again, it's anybody's race at this point.
Well, and people can still jump into the race.
People are talking
about Alderman Pawar, who ran for governor.
Yeah.
Which some people like. You know, he's another person that might surprise
people. Would you ever want to be mayor?
Would I ever want to be mayor? I would want to get the experience first. I don't think I thought about running for alderman a few years ago. And instead the office was, is now occupied by John Arena, and the work that he does. I don't know that I would want to be on call 24 hours a day, responsible and accountable for what everyone, from potholes to trees that have smelly berries, to not wanting, you know, John Arena wants to open up opportunity, not just for our community, but for people throughout the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
He's very progressive, and people really resent him for that. Mm-hmm. He's a target in our neighborhood. And I think there are a lot of people in the city who work very hard. And I don't know if I have the skin for it. How about you? Would you ever want to run for office?
You know, I've thought about it. I would want to run for mayor because I love the city so much.
Yeah.
You know, but there's such a heavy burden that comes with that. I mean, you really are. You're the CEO of the city.
Right.
You know, anything that happens. Yeah, unfortunately, there are murders and there is crime. There's a lot of crime. And it always falls back to, well, you know, the mayor needs to do something about it. Well, I think he's trying. I think anybody in that position is trying. Nobody wants the murder rate to be what it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's almost a thankless job. So I'd love the positive side of it, being in the parades and beautifying the city. But just the negatives, I think, would far outweigh the positives.
Yeah, I would want to. Yeah, I think I would. And I agree with you. I love this city. I think I would want to build up the experience and the knowledge. And then, of course, you'd have to really make sure you have a team in place. I don't know. Are there in the history of this country and I guess more specifically in this city, has there ever been a novice who has risen to that office, who has not,
question.
You know, what does it take? What's the skill set that you want from your mayor?
Yeah.
You know, is it being a good leader? Is it, 'cause I don't think Rahm Emanuel ever really connected with his constituents as a leader. I think that even Daley had some element of that. And Jane Byrne, Mayor Blahnik obviously didn't have that. He didn't respond in ways that people wanted him to, even when there was just a blizzard, which I guess I'm making it sound simple, but he froze, literally.
He did, yeah. That's how Jane Byrne was able to win.
Yeah. So I wish that I had the skill set to even consider the question, should I run for mayor?
I know.
But maybe someday I'll just keep reading and talking to people, and you have to run for something else first. I wouldn't want that executive office to be my first, I think, is the way
I would look at that. Yeah.
That's the way it should be for anybody. We are, you know, we'll take your texts and calls if you have anything to add to that conversation about the mayor. We have the list if you want to go through it. But we could also talk about shows that we're binge watching, or we could talk about Nike, which is fascinating too.
It's fascinating too.
I kind of wonder if it's time to buy stock, because I have a theory about this.
We have to tell the story too about what Nike, you're talking about the Kaepernick.
Just do it. And people are I saw pictures. Do you think it's true that the people are lighting their shoes on fire while they're still wearing them?
I hope so.
I don't understand. Why would you destroy something that you already paid money for?
Because people are dummies.
Why wouldn't you donate that to somebody who
needs shoes.
Right?
Right. If you don't want to wear the shoes because of it,
yeah,
fine.
Don't wear the shoes. Donate them.
Donate them.
Bag it up.
Yes.
What's that, the woman that talks about decluttering your life? If it doesn't bring you joy, set it free.
There you go.
Marie Kondo.
Yes. Yeah. Set your Nike free. Let it run.
That's going to be the next slogan. Just do it to set your Nike free.
Set your Nike free. It is. By the way, we should talk about how much free advertising they've got from this. Right now, we just, yeah.
Yep.
Maybe I'm, all right.
They always run too small for me.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel has announced that he will not be seeking re-election. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We'll wrap up this conversation because I think that we're going to be talking about this for days, weeks, months. But listener, and I was talking about this off the air with Esmeralda, excellent points, everyone. This is from the 312. The mayor closed schools, mental health services, and had no investment in minority communities. And I think that people will consider that to be part of his legacy as well. And when I was talking to Troy La Reverie. La Reverie. La Reverie. I have it on this page. La Reverie.
Yes.
There's R's. There's more R's in there. He doesn't use them, and that's confusing to me. But you know, I should also practice. The conversation I was talking about when it comes to schools, and that was kind of what I was trying to talk about, was when there was desegregation in the 70s and 80s. It was removing kids from their neighborhoods and basically telling them your community is not worth investing in. And then when we stopped doing that, we then started to close the schools in their communities and basically telling them your community is still not worth investing in. And that was kind of, but I get where he was coming from because his school was not necessarily one of those. But as an educator, and I didn't even get into the special needs programs, which were also redirected. I tried making phone calls and asked them, you know, about the budgets, because they made special needs funding sort of nondescript. They could co-opt that for other programs in the school and not necessarily
like that, art or whatever it might be. Yeah.
And that's why they're under investigation. And if you saw this a few months ago, that they were not fully funding the special needs program. So that's happening on a lot of different levels throughout the city. From the 815, I think Rahm peaked and he knew it. Huh. Why not leave on his own terms? It was probably only going to get worse for him, and it's got to be the hardest job on earth, as there's no viable solution to gang violence. You know, I was talking to somebody today.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
A very valid point.
I was talking to a woman today who lives in a neighborhood that has a lot of gang violence, and she was saying that she believes that it's partly because they have removed the highest leaders of the gangs that has destabilized the hierarchy. And that it used to be, when she was growing up in the neighborhood, that women and children, in particular moms, were never touched.
Targeted. Exactly. Never targeted. And the fights seemed to be over drugs and turf.
Mm-hmm.
So it was between one faction and another. You know, you had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that. So we were kind of off limits. That's very true.
And she was saying that people think that a lot of it is, the market of dealing drugs. She said now a lot of these young men are just taking the drugs, and a huge mix of them. You know, she said she asked her, she asked a young man in her neighborhood. She said, you know, if you overdose, what do you think? You're taking everything. They're not going to be able to treat you. And I was like, it was just so matter of fact.
Yeah.
And that's not an experience that I have on the northwest side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Where you even have, I mean, not to say that there aren't kids, there aren't young people who are abusing drugs. It's a prevalent problem in the city. But she was saying that in her community, it's just commonplace. And that the, you know, what we think of as sort of this drug trade is also something that's just common for consumption.
Right. And I think the prices, too, have gone way down. It's a lot cheaper now to get certain drugs than it was when, say, we were 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, even.
Again, you and I have talked about how, you know, we just love the city. And, and that means, and I don't, it means all of it.
Yeah.
That's the part I think that's hard for everyone, is that means all of it, you know, all of its warts and calluses, all of its, you know, all of its history,
mm-hmm.
all of its beauty and all of its ugliness. And that means wanting more for it, wanting to spread that beauty. And that doesn't mean just the flowers. That means the hope,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah,
is the best way I can put it right now.
So another texture put, he can now relax a bit. Oh, we talked about this in the newsroom too. Write a book, go to the private sector, jump back on a campaign. He made the right choice, and that's from a Rahm fan. And Judy Pilak, I think, today pointed out that all of his kids are either in college or out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he wants to sit back and enjoy life with his wife.
So he was out of the house while they were growing up, and now that they're gone.
They're right.
He's like, oh, maybe I'll stay home a little bit.
Stay home a little bit.
Interesting.
More now.
You know, and I understand he's going to be on Steve Cochran's show in the morning, so
yes,
you can tune in for that. I don't know why, Ez, he won't, take our phone calls. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not touching that one.
How you doing, Mike? What's going on?
Okay. I get so mad. I'm African-American. I grew up around 62nd and Lomas.
Okay.
I'm 70 now.
Okay.
People saying the murder rate. They can stop the murder rate. Everybody in those neighborhoods knows who's doing the killing. They won't tell the police until their relative or they get shot.
Mm-hmm. And even then, it doesn't seem to be...
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So don't be saying it's the mayor's fault or it's the police's fault. They know who's doing the killing. Rat them out.
Mike, go ahead, Andrea.
Yeah, here's another thought, Mike, and I do agree with you. I think the police are, you know, should be paid triple what they're getting paid right now to deal with everything that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And they're our first responders, too. So we have to thank the men and women of the Chicago Police Department every single day. However, that being said, they're arresting people. I think they are getting people, but because of the court system, how they are now, they get a slap on the wrist. You know, we did a story a couple weeks ago. Remember the car? Yeah, 5%. I mean, we did the carjacking story a few weeks ago. He was let out because he was a juvenile, and the next day went and did a carjacking, went allegedly, you know, whatever, accused of carjacking. Right here was an off-duty or a retired police officer and another woman. You know, I think there needs to be stricter laws to keep these offenders behind bars.
Do you think deterrence would help, Mike, or do you think it's strictly the fact that people in the community refuse to narc on their neighbors and the people that are...
That, and yeah, just because you're a juvenile, if you're stealing 5 cars a week, you don't need the street.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. You just don't need to be on the street.
Yeah, so there have to be tougher penalties.
So Mike, have you grown up and lived your entire life in neighborhoods that have now, you know, the stories that we talk about and we say the South Side? What is that where you've lived your most real life?
No, when I graduated, I moved to Hyde Park, and now I don't even live in the city anymore. So, you know, it's just I sit there and people talk about how bad Chicago. I graduated from Chicago Public Schools. I have a great education.
Uh-huh.
And now it's just, it's bad, it's bad. It was never this bad.
Well, and that's a little bit of what the conversation I had with a woman who does continue to live in the neighborhoods. She said that it's the destabilization of the gangs has been a big problem, too, and where young people aren't taught how to resolve conflicts either, that you just go to that, well, I'm just going to shoot somebody, rather than, you know, try to find another way out of that situation.
Yeah, I'm going to go shoot somebody. Excuse me, officer, Jeff just shot that guy. He lives over in that building right there. How hard is that?
Yeah, but you also have to think Jeff knows who you are.
Right.
And
right.
Someone will probably.
Well,
that's, exactly.
Again, Mike, that's what this woman was saying, is that now if you do that, they're going to come shoot your nephew or your niece or your young son or your mom. There aren't any rules anymore. So that it's a retribution.
The way it's going, they're going to get shot anyway, by mistake or on purpose. You're just as dead.
There you go. All right, Mike, thank you so much for your input and your perspective. We appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you. Have a good day.
See you, Mike.
We're not going to solve it tonight. I know that for sure. I mean, otherwise, Andrea and I would be co-mayors.
That's right.
We'd be like, hey, we figured it out.
Right.
Mike says we should just have just tell on people. That's not the only element. That doesn't mean it's not an element.
Exactly.
So
it's
thank
a,
you,
it's
Mike.
A huge element,
I didn't mean to be dismissive of it, but he
didn't want to
have a conversation.
I don't think you were dismissive. It's an absolute issue, but there are ramifications to everything.
Yeah.
You know, that is a good point. It would, in a perfect world, it would be great to say, Patty did it, and then...
Right.
They go, but then I have to fear that your husband, brother, or sister,
abuelita,
child,
poor abuelita, she's like,
come
por qué?
After me.
Por qué?
Yeah. Oh, so Darla's ratted her out. Okay.
Okay, so this is something that's also come up today from the, I saw this speculated upon. Patty V, it's very clear that Rahm is considering running against Trump. His brother is worth over $5 billion. They will convert the states that Hillary could not win. This is very serious. Rahm will strongly consider going for the White House.
I don't think so either.
But
higher office, yes.
Hey, we also didn't think he was going to run for, yeah. He was going to not run for mayor. Right. So who are we to say?
I said 0%. And look how they are. I also thought Hillary would win. I mean, I just, you know.
Oh, hey. I thought Trump was going to win. Did we ever talk about this?
No.
Oh, we've never talked about this.
You thought Trump was going to win?
The night he announced, I said, be very careful. This man could be the next president of the United States. I had a bet with Professor Green.
Oh,
I know.
Rest his soul.
I know. He and I had a bet that Professor Green thought that Trump would not make it past the first debate. And I had a bet that he would. And then Scott Stantis. Oh, you don't know about this?
No.
Scott Stantis bet that he wouldn't get through the first debate either. And I said, not only will he make it past the first debate, his numbers will go up. And throughout the campaign
season.
Okay,
that's pretty interesting.
Oh, by the end, Scott, so we bet a couple things. And then what I cashed in on was live on the air, Scott Stantis, the cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, had to get his body waxed on the air. But not,
oh, gross.
Not like,
I didn't know any of this.
Don't make bets with me.
No, I'm never going to make a bet with you.
Don't make bets with me. He had to have, and Ez and I, and I think Ez, was it your idea that he have alternating parts of his body? I think that was in your.
Oh, was it?
I think because
like pierced.
I think I said inner thigh because that really hurts.
Yeah.
Me.
Oh, so
tits.
So he had to have a one thigh. No, it was all waxing. He had to have one thigh and one armpit waxed. He had to have his.
Was this on the air?
On the air.
Oh,
we have video of it somewhere. I'm sure it's a Facebook
so
live video.
Gross. Oh, I bet. Yeah.
But I was betting him through the entire election, the campaign season, that that Trump would win the entire thing.
Oh yeah. All right. So I'm not. I probably shouldn't play the lottery. Because I said 0% chance Rahm won't run.
Right. You never thought that Trump was going to win?
Only on election night when I was sitting at the Javits Center
in
New York and I went,
uh-oh.
Oh my God. She is going to lose this election. Only because, you know, I'm there. I wanted a victory party. I was ready for some champagne.
Right.
Fancy food. I flew all the way out there.
I was on the air when we told our audience.
I talked to you.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We were like, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump is taking the stage as he claims victory in the presidential election.
And you were like, I am cashing in all my bets.
Yeah, all I won was hairy strips of Scott Stantis' body.
So you should have bet money.
He was also supposed to play the flute during the winter on Michigan Avenue in his high school football uniform. But that wasn't as delightful as having him waxed on the air.
Do you think Rahm will run for president?
No.
I don't either.
All right. So there you go. On the air, we said, I think that he's always been a great behind-the-scenes guy.
Yeah.
I don't think the country will. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we are going to have. So you can talk to Scott about this on Thursday about his, you know, about
his
one
waxing.
About getting waxed.
Oh.
And also the various images he posted today, all the different incarnations of his cartoons of Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, that's right. Who's he going to draw?
Exactly.
Paul or Lori or Gary.
Oh, boy.
It's like Romper Room. Remember that?
Yeah.
I see Lori and Paul.
But that's how we should elect our next candidate is who will Scott draw best? Who do you want to see as a political cartoon for the next
how
4 years?
Can he draw everybody and then we can pick?
We can pick?
Okay, yeah.
Come on, Scott. Get to it. Tell me something when we come back. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Come on, get happy. My something happy is Andrea Darlis is back from vacation.
Oh, I missed you guys.
We got the band back together.
We do. We're all here.
We're all here. And you watched at least one of my recommendations.
I watched.
I got you sucked in, didn't I?
Wait,
the other one was Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah. No, I was stuck on Handmaids because I watched a couple of cool movies.
What'd you watch?
Miss Sloan with Jessica Chastain. It was fantastic. I didn't even hear about that at the movies.
She's like a fixer or something, isn't
she?
She's
a lobbyist.
A lobbyist.
You would really like it. It's very good.
I think I saw it.
She
gets a heart in the middle of it, doesn't she? Or she realizes that she's it was a tobacco company thing, isn't it?
It's guns.
Guns.
Yes.
That's right. That's
another
right, that's right.
Major special interest group. Yeah.
I think I watched it on a plane. It seemed really good.
It was good. And then what else? Disobedience with Rachel McAdams and Rachel Weisz.
Mm-hmm.
and they're childhood friends, and they're raised in this very Jewish community, Hasidic Jewish community, and one deviates, one moves to New York and becomes a photographer, and the other stays within the community.
Okay.
And what happens with them. It's very, very good.
Interesting.
And Handmaid's Tale, Patty, I'm so hooked. I go to bed and then I wake up and I think, oh my God, if she'd only done this, or oh, if she only made it on the plane, you know.
So Handmaid's Tale is a sort of, a dystopian future.
Yes.
In which fundamental Christians extremists,
yeah,
have basically taken over the parts of the country,
yes,
and renamed it because there is an epidemic pretty much worldwide,
yes,
of infertility. People, yes, are unable to have babies, and oh my gosh, you know what was funny is, have you watched any of Handmaid's Tale?
No, it's so depressing.
It is really depressing.
So depressing. And after two episodes, I was going to text you, Patty, and I thought, it's so depressing, and it's very, you know, we are, the three of us, I mean, we're very strong women. We're all about female empowerment and empowering women, and this is so not that. And I thought, okay, I need to just get past this because, you know,
right,
you're a movie buff, and, yeah, you know, you have good taste. I thought, no, you do. You
Patty must have a reason for liking this.
No, you usually, you know, you like the beauty of a movie or,
yes,
the cinematography.
This
and,
is gorgeous.
You know, you appreciate good acting, so I, yeah, thought, all right, I'm just going to stick with this, and I am so hooked on it.
Well, I also think it's the beauty that I also find it is the depiction of the human spirit and how it manifests in so many different ways,
yes,
of surviving.
Yes.
And the other thing is that I was fascinated by the roles of Canada and Mexico in this.
Oh, yes.
As Mexico lets us down so badly.
Yes, they do, and Canada is so good.
Bringing in refugees,
yes,
trying to, like, you know, they're, it's all kinds of stuff, and I was like, okay,
yeah,
can we go back and, right, what are we trying to say in this little,
yeah,
you know, but it's fine,
and
it's
the,
fine,
and the acting too, I mean, except for the lead actress, I can't think of her name, Elizabeth Moss,
mm-hmm,
aside, and she's been in Mad Men, I mean, I know she's
in West Wing, she plays the president's daughter in,
yes,
West Wing.
I remember that, Zoe,
yes,
yeah,
it is.
I remember the daughter,
Zoe Bartlett, right,
she is probably, at least for me, was the only big actress or,
right,
well known. I think the other characters, the acting is just brilliant in, yeah, this, you know.
Paul's a little bit confused because he's usually here when we're talking about The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh,
and
well,
he's
talk about it
not
next
in
time.
Studio, but I Joseph Fiennes, by the way, that's who plays.
Oh, he's good.
Because
I hate him.
Yeah,
I do.
And the different roles that the women are confined to, and then you because you start out in this house of,
yeah,
of just her commander, and you know she's the handmaid, and then the wife, but then you start to peel back into the bigger world of all the handmaids,
mm-hmm,
and then all of the other commanders and all the other families. But then you find these neighborhoods,
yeah,
of families that are allowed to continue as they were because they already had kids or,
yeah,
and
how it breaks out. And I love the backstories too, like how,
yes,
they all got there, like what happened,
yeah,
in their lives to come to this point,
yeah,
and it's just, they're fascinating characters. The other girl I have to give props to, the one from Gilmore Girls, and I know
Alexis
Nick will
Bedell.
Be, yeah, I know Nick is gonna just hug me when he sees me, but she is a rock star.
Well, I've been meaning to have Nick on to do like a whole hour on Handmaid's Tale, so maybe when when you're done with the whole series and we can figure out a time to schedule that, because
I'll be done by this weekend,
and I'll have to rewatch the whole thing because I finished the last episode. I was like, Nick, you gotta come on my show, we gotta talk about this. And then we never lined it up because of the White Sox games and when I was off and when he was in, so maybe we can figure this out.
Okay,
I'll go back and rewatch it.
Yes.
But then I had to be in that world again psychologically, and it messes me up.
Isn't it hard?
Yes.
I mean, you do. Esmeralda's right. I wake up not depressed, but thinking about it, and I'm like, oh God.
A lot of people stop watching it, but I think that you'll be pleased with the season finale.
Do they revolt? Don't tell me.
Season 2. I can't tell you. I can't tell you.
I love it.
It's promising, is all I'm saying.
That'd be my something good, is it?
Oh.
I had, you know, great movie experiences.
There you go.
And my staycation.
And I'm trying to watch this show, The Sinner, but I don't know if I'm going to make it. It's rough. It's Bill Pullman and Jessica Biel. And
I like both of them.
They're great. I just don't know. I keep falling asleep, so that's probably part of the problem. It doesn't mean it's bad. I just am exhausted, is all.
We are going to get you on Game of Thrones. That's the goal.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I just need a better television. I don't see all the mud and the sweat. Michael, before we do I have to go to break? No, but do I have to say the thing?
You could say the thing if you'd like, but you do not have to go to break.
My thing is that I want to see what your something good is,
yeah.
Michael.
Oh, okay. My something good was it was a good, relaxing Labor Day weekend. Everything is fantastic. I saw some really cool movies as well. I'm glad you guys are enjoying Handmaid's Tale so much.
The Handmaids? What's the plural?
Are you really glad?
Handmaids.
Sounds like a fantastic show. Well, Tales. Yeah, if you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always good. My good thing, though, it's my grandpa's 91st birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday, Grandpa.
Or yesterday. Yeah, so it was his birthday. And I had a great show this weekend, too. I had a lot of cool guests on.
Yes, I got some great messages about your show. You're filling in for David Pleyer.
Yes, I was. And it was a really good time. We had Domitian, we had Vic Pandya, Tyler Fowler, Paige Blair, a lot of great comedians in Chicago. So it was a good time, and it's good to see you both back.
Thank you.
Awesome. What's up, Andrea?
It's good to be back. Yay. Love you, Michael. You sound so good.
Of course, the mayor announces he's dropping out, and you're like, good, I'm glad. How can I not be on the air tonight?
I know.
Right. Before I forget, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. I don't want to forget about Ez. Ez is like, please don't. Do we have to come? I'm coming to you, Ez. By the way, I need to find out about gazpacho. Are we going to do a gazpacho night between you and my mom head to head?
Oh, I can't. Okay. The one that I do.